We're glad to see each of you here tonight. We have a few visitors, and we're thankful to have you. Before I get into the lesson, I'd like to comment on two things. Number one, Charles and Grace Butler are going to be going to North Jackson now for at least a while. If I understand it, they came here when Mr. William needed some assistance in coming to church, and had been at North Jackson for a long time. And Charlie's children and the granddaughter have agreed to go with him over there, and he's doing that particularly for them. We're going to miss him, but I would do the same thing if I could help save the souls of my children and grandchild, and I don't blame them at all. There is nothing negative. It's just a situation that they need to go there at least for now in order to encourage the children and granddaughter in going to class. I have talked this afternoon to each of the ministers of the four congregations that worked with us during the area-wide meeting back in November and given them specific details about our meeting and asked them to try to have at least one, if maybe two, song leaders from their congregation here Sunday afternoon. There has been a lot of talk about the possibility of beginning a monthly singing rotated among these five congregations and other churches if they're interested too. And so we want to see how the singing goes Sunday. As announced, after we finish eating, we'll come back over here and start singing around 1:30 or maybe a little before. We'll use the song leaders from each of the congregations and sing for 30, 40 minutes. And then we'll stop and have a prayer and put Brother Meadows in the pulpit for a lesson. We should be through around 2:30 or a little after, and I have asked one or two from each of those congregations to meet with me after that service Sunday afternoon to talk about what we want to do this year. I personally would like to see us have another gospel meeting like we had this last year. It's one of the best things I think we've ever done, and everybody's been positive about it. One possibility that's been suggested is to still have the five churches and meet at the five buildings, but to ask someone to come in as a speaker and speak each night at each of the buildings. And there is a possibility, if everybody's interested, and I've talked to two or three about this from the different churches, that we can get Tom Holland. Brother Holland has preached all over the area, is one of the best speakers that we have in the Brotherhood. He's not able to walk very well now, but he's just as sharp as he ever was. He's 84 years old, and he's not going to be able to conduct meetings much longer. And so I'm meeting with people from the four congregations Sunday afternoon after our service to talk about what we want to do. And the general idea that I get from everybody is to try to have another gospel meeting, perhaps the third week in November. We had it the second week this last year. And if you have any comments or suggestions along that line, let us know. I was just thinking today about the number of people that are here that have begun to come here since I came 3.5 years ago. I was also thinking that in a sense, Charles and Deborah, we just switched Charlies, haven't we? We got this Charlie and had to lose another Charlie. So we're glad that Charlie and Deborah are here and part of the congregation. I'm glad that the rest of you, so some of you have been baptized, some have become members. Some have been restored in the last few years, and I just appreciate each one of you. We're in the process on Sunday evenings of developing a series of lessons centered around the word daily. The word daily suggests regularity in Christianity. This is the third lesson tonight. The first one had to do with daily study, and the second one had to do with daily teaching. I went through the Bible and found all the passages that I could that mentioned the word daily, and from that came up with 10 ideas that I want to produce into these lessons. Tonight's lesson is taken from Luke 9, verse 23. It is the same as Matthew 16:24, except it adds one word, the important word in our discussion tonight. Matthew 16:24 says, "If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." Luke's account says, "If any man will come after me, Let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. We might call this lesson tonight by different titles. I guess from the verse itself that we need to call it daily cross bearing. We might call it daily living without doing any damage to the idea. And I think especially we might call it daily responsibility. In fact, as we come to a conclusion in the lesson tonight, that is the one word that I will emphasize probably more than anything else. Christianity is to be a daily religion. There are so many people today who live their lives by going up high and back down and up high and back down. That's sort of those that are involved with drugs and other things. A person who's got to have some kind of drugs to live and even waste money to buy them has got to have that high. And he takes something and it gives him a high, and then when it wears off, there's the low back where he was and sometimes even farther down. I'm convinced that the Bible teaches us that Christianity ought to be more on a level plane. We know that we do have our ups and downs. There are days that I'm happier than other days. There are days that I feel better than other days. There are days that more good things happen than other days, and days that more bad things happen than other days. And I'm rather sure you could say the same thing about your life. But as a Christian, we've got to learn to take those things into consideration and learn to face those things. If there are difficulties, face them with God's help. If there are good things, face them and be able to accept them and use them in the right way. When he says, take up your cross daily, I believe that's what he's talking about. Learning to live every day for Christ. You'll hear somebody talking about what he's doing, and he'll say that we're available 24/7. You know what that means. Some businesses are like that. Some doctors at one time especially were like that. Call me 24/7 if you need me. And I've said that to congregations where I've worked, basically down through my history of being a minister. I wanted to be on call 24/7. If anybody needed me at midnight, I wanted them to call. And by the way, I've received a lot of calls at midnight. During the years I worked at Henderson, I emphasized to the students at Freed Hardeman, call me if you need me, and especially if you have someone that wants to be baptized. I think I have been to that building in Henderson at every hour of the day. I've had people call me at 1 o'clock in the morning, wake me out of sleep, need me to meet them at the building to baptize somebody. Well, I wanted it to be that way, and I emphasized that it needed to be that way. And whether it's somebody on call or what, there is a sense in which if you're living the Christian life, you are to be living for God 24/7. Even when you're sleeping and possibly snoring, you're still to be living for God. In fact, sleeping and rest is as much a part of the cycle of life for each of us physically as many other things. When you are on vacation, and that's something that's not bad, all of us need to be recreated in a sense. If you go on vacation, you may not be doing some of the things that you've been doing, but you're still a Christian. Not only in the sense of setting the right kind of example, but in the sense of looking for opportunities, even then, to do good for someone if you can. That's what this is saying. Take up your cross daily and follow me. Now notice the specific words that are in this verse. He says, first, you've got to deny yourself. It is almost impossible for a person to have a successful life if he is the center of that life, to the extent that he thinks more about what he wants than he does what other people needs. A person who is self-centered has extreme difficulty in living a life of service. Now, that doesn't mean that we just forget ourselves. I believe God expects us to think about ourselves physically, mentally, spiritually, and socially. At least that's the four ways that Jesus grew in Luke 2:52. But if one becomes a legend in his own mind, and I didn't say time, a legend in his own mind, and is sort of like that song that, I don't remember the words, some of you do, oh, it's, "You're so vain." You probably think this song is about you. And sometimes you see two people over there talking, you think, well, I'll bet they're talking about me. And most of the time, I'll bet you they hadn't even thought about you. But anyway, if we get so vain that we think in terms of ourselves and what we want and what we want others to do for us, we're not going to be successful. First, you've got to deny yourself. Put God and others ahead of self. And then he says, take up your cross. That's the daily living. And then he gives some instruction that's extremely important. Take up your cross and follow me. He didn't say take up your cross and do something. He didn't say take up your cross and live some kind of life and just be sincere in it, whatever it is. He said take up your cross daily and follow me. Our daily cross bearing, our daily living, is to be following in the footsteps of Jesus. So this verse is certainly helpful to us on this subject. Take up your cross, deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow me. The next verse that I want us to consider is over in 1 Corinthians, the 15th chapter, verse 31. In fact, let's look at 31 and 32. I protest by your rejoicing, which I have in Christ Jesus our Lord, I die daily. Three words. I die daily. The next verse gives us a little insight to what he means. If after the manner of men I have fought with beasts at Ephesus, what advantageth it me? If the dead rise not, let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. I die daily. What does that suggest when you look at those two verses? I think it suggests that we need to live. I mentioned this in the last verse, but I emphasize it again. I do admit and would also emphasize that we're not ready to live until we're ready to die. And maybe he is thinking in this verse that the possibility of death is ever before his eyes. And if you will reflect on the kind of life that Paul had to live and the persecutions that he faced, you can see how that was true. And so he says, there is a sense in which I die daily. He may have been emphasizing to them, there is a sense in which I literally face the possibility of death daily. Well, that's true, isn't it, really, for all of us? It was especially true in his set of circumstances at that time. Every day you and I face the possibility of death. It could come at any time. Just a few days ago, Helen's nephew, who was buried this afternoon, Pete Smith, left and started down the road in his automobile. A few minutes later, we think he had had a stroke. He hit a tree and broke most of the bones in his body. He didn't make it. He was buried this afternoon. A husband to one of the young ladies with whom I went to school in high school, 3 or 4 days ago, was out in the pasture on his four-wheeler and got stuck and got a lot of mud on his tires and came back to the house and told her he was going to drive up and down the road a time or two to get the mud off of his tires. They found him a few hours later having crashed against a tree and was dead. I know what this means. Tuesday at 10:30 at the East Tennessee School of Preaching, as we've known it for years, I'll be speaking on the Friends of the Restoration part of the program. And although I'm assigned the topic of preachers who have affected the work of the church in East Tennessee, I've been asked to especially talk about my father-in-law, one of the finest Christian men that I ever knew, that was killed in an automobile accident just less than a year after Judy and I were married. As a 20-year-old young man, I got back from a trip. He was dead my wife and mother-in-law were in the hospital. I never even dealt with death before. I have learned, especially from that point on, that there is a sense in which we face the possibility of death every day. But don't let what I've said in the last 2 or 3 minutes cause you to be morbid. I think this passage is also saying that we need to live daily, and emphasizing again what we mentioned earlier. Notice in verse 32, he says, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we may die." I die daily. I'm facing the possibility of death every day. And there is another sense in which from the day I was born, my body was reacting, going toward the day of death. And somewhere along the line, it seems to have begun to go faster in that direction. But folks, even though we die daily and we face the possibility of death every day, that ought not to keep us from enjoying life. There are many times that I shed tears, and you do. But I think you know that I enjoy a good life also. I believe we need to be serious about serious things. I had an opportunity Friday to go to the West Tennessee Children's Home and speak in chapel to those 21 or 2, 3 boys that are there. These are young men that are there because they've gotten into trouble or they didn't have anybody to care for them. Most of them, when they came, were not members of the church. Some of them have been baptized since. And I spoke to them really on the subject of advice in automobile language, but emphasized especially that there is a time to laugh, and I told them some funny stories, and there is a time to be serious. I believe that very strongly. And I think that's what's involved in this passage here, where he says, "I die daily. I am living, facing the possibility of death at any time, but while I'm doing that, I'm going to eat and drink." And there's one passage that says, "Eat, drink, and be merry," because we're going one of these days to leave this earth. So in this passage, he emphasizes the possibility of death, and we may stand in the face of that possibility every day, but we need to take advantage of the opportunities every day. The next passage to which I turned is in 2 Corinthians, the 11th chapter, and verse 28. "Beside those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches." Now let's go back to verse 23 and read up to that verse. "Are they ministers of Christ? I speak as a fool. I am more. In labors more abundant, in stripes above measure, in prisons more frequent, in deaths oft. Of the Jews, 5 times received I 40 stripes save one. Thrice was I beaten with rods, once I was stoned, thrice I suffered shipwreck. A night in the day I have been in the deep, in journeyings often, in perils of water, in perils of robbers, in perils of mine own countrymen, in perils by the heathen, in perils in the city, in perils in the wilderness, in perils in the sea, in perils among false brethren." Then number 27, "In weariness and painfulness, in watchings often, in hunger and thirst, in fastings often, in cold and naked, besides those things that are without, that which cometh upon me daily, the care of all the churches." Well, there are several things that are indicated in this. Again, we have the emphasis placed on daily suffering. And Paul literally had that. We have the idea suggested here that you and I might describe as burdens. We have our own burdens. We sometimes say we have our own baggage that we carry every day. And it's interesting, in the same chapter in Galatians 6, verses 2 and 5, Paul says, "Bear your own burdens and bear one another's burdens." And then there's a passage back in Psalms, if I remember right, Psalm 55, that says, "Cast your burdens on the Lord." There are some burdens that you bear personally, there are some burdens that others can share with you, and there's some that nobody can take care of except the Lord. We have those burdens on a daily basis. Sometimes people are able to hide their problems better than others. Some people can show exactly what they're feeling all the time. But I would guess that every person that's in this audience tonight is dealing with some kind of a problem in your life. I am. Everything is not perfect. There are problems in my family with some of my family members. There are problems among my friends, some that I've shared with you of illness, one particularly extremely critical. I wouldn't be surprised at getting a call at any time that she has not made it. These things happen. I doubt that any of us have it to the extent that Paul describes here. I've never had to suffer in the same way that he did. Perhaps you haven't. But we have those burdens that we bear. And then it's interesting to look at the latter part of verse 28. He says, I also have the care of all the churches. Now, when I read that, I'd like to think that he is saying, everybody in all these churches care about me, and I have their concern for me. And that may be a part of it. But I think when you read it in context, that he's talking about all the concern that he has for these different churches. And when you think about the letters that he wrote, particularly the letter to the church at Corinth, you remember all the problems they were having that he had to address? And in almost all of the letters that he wrote back to the church where he had established those congregations, he wrote back and addressed some of the things that they were facing. There was a sense in which he was carrying or trying to carry the burdens of all these churches. He considered them to be his own personal people, perhaps his own personal family. And he said he was doing that on a daily basis, that he had a daily care for all the churches. I hope I never come to the point, and I hope you never come to the point, that we don't care what's happening to other Christians. I think there is a special care that we ought to have for our own family here, and a special care for church, especially those that are the household of faith, mentioned in Galatians 6:10 when he tells us we are to do good. If you can go through a week or even a day and never think about the problems that you know that some of our brothers and sisters are facing, there's something wrong with you. When we know that someone like Helen or Margaret or Molly have lost a loved one, a relative, and we never even think about that, never have any concern about it, never pray about it, it's hard for me to understand how one could claim to be a Christian and do that. Now, I don't believe the shoulders of anybody are big enough to carry the burdens of everybody. And sometimes people can get to the point that they almost lose contact with reality because they're trying to carry too much. In fact, I'm not for sure that any one of us can carry the burdens of his own sins and problems if he doesn't receive forgiveness and accept forgiveness from God on a regular basis. But Paul says, on a daily basis, I care for what's happening with all of my brethren. And in the face of these persecutions that he's dealing with every day, he says, I also have that concern that I'm carrying every day for my fellow Christians. That's a part of our daily cross-bearing. And I think that's what he was involved with here. Now I want to go to a passage that doesn't use the word daily, but emphasizes what we've been emphasizing in these passages that do. And this time it's in Luke 14. I particularly am reading verse 27. Whosoever doth not bear his cross, and in our own minds, since we've established it in another passage, we might put the word daily there, and come after me, that's the same thing as following Jesus in Luke 9:23, cannot be my disciple. Now, folks, that's a strong statement. Jesus says there's a situation where you cannot. He didn't say might not, maybe, perhaps. He said there is a situation where you cannot be my disciple. In fact, it's interesting that two other verses in this chapter also say the same thing using another principle. Verse 26, If any man come to me and hate not his father and mother and wife and children and brothers and sisters, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. Now, an analysis of that verse will show that he's not promoting hatred for members of the family, but that he's saying, unless you love me more than you love your family, you cannot be my disciple. And then in verse 33, so likewise, whosoever he be of you that forsaketh not all that he hath, he cannot be my disciple. Now, I don't know how you could find a passage that would emphasize personal responsibility any more than this one. I wish I knew how to get everybody that hears anything that I say to be committed to personal responsibility. If we have to be urged to live a Christian life, something is lacking. Now, there are times that we cannot do certain things. For example, today, Dylan is sick at home with the flu. If Dylan were not sick, I know where Dylan would be tonight. I don't think he'd ever question whether or not he'd be at the services tonight if he were able to be here. When you and I became Christians, we should have made the decision that moment that I'm going to be at worship unless it's beyond my control. I'm going to give of my means in a reasonable way. I'm going to treat people in the right way. You see, we ought not to ever even have to think about that again. We should make that decision. Those of you that are married, when you married, you should have made the decision, I'm going to be a faithful husband or I'm going to be a faithful wife the rest of our lives. In fact, that's sort of what you promised in the vows, isn't it? Do you have to get up every day and say, am I going to be faithful to my wife today? Am I going to be faithful to my husband today? You shouldn't. And somehow or other, I get the impression and remember that the Bible says that as the church, we're married to Christ. Should I get up and say, now, am I going to be faithful to my husband today in the spiritual sense? You see, that's personal responsibility. When I think about taking care of my body, keeping it as healthy as I can. When I think about my mind, keeping it as pure as it ought to be. When I think about my family and the love that I should have for them. When each of us thinks about his job, each of us thinks about his spiritual life. Who has the basic responsibility to make the right decisions? You do. And nobody else can do it for you. I do. And nobody else can do it for me. I believe, folks, that's what daily cross-bearing is about. If any man will come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. It is being committed. It is accepting personal responsibility, not trying to blame somebody else, but looking at self, and with God's help, facing the good times and the bad times, the good things and the bad things that may happen every day, but determined to be a Christian and to live for God no matter what comes. Take up your cross daily and follow me. If you've not begun that cross-bearing, you need to think about it. If you have begun it, and you've sort of laid it down, you need to pick it up again. And I'm going to tell you something that's important. There is no other cross in the world that's any easier for you to bear than yours. Oh, you look at somebody else and say, if I just had everything that person has, I'd be all right. You don't know what that person has. If I just had the opportunities that somebody else has, I'd be okay. If I just had the money that somebody else has, I'd be all right. If I just had the talents and the ability that somebody else has, I'd be okay. I think we might be surprised if we tried to lay down our own crosses, our own responsibilities, and pick up the responsibilities of somebody else. Until we have walked a mile in His shoes, we don't really understand His cross. But I've been walking a long time in my shoes, and I ought to understand my cross and with God's help how to bear it. If you've put down your cross and need to pick it back up, do that tonight. Maybe it's just a personal decision you have to make. But if it's something that involves others to the extent that you need to confess faults, come as together.